I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WIAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays, 9 to 11 o'clock. Today, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, we'll do what we always do, Freedom and Prosperity Hour, with a representative for Americans for Prosperity. It's like Christmas. I'm not sure who's coming in today, but we will see. I've got a couple of headlines to take a look at. I probably should do my entire first hour segment with Americans for Prosperity. We're going to talk a little bit about, the way people are living, the permanent underclass, so many unnecessary things that are taking place in the United States right now. Just it doesn't have to be this way. It quite simply does not have to be this way. And it is only because of, as a libertarian I recognize, the failed policies of government. We've been given all of the tools here, which is just freedom. We're supposed to have free markets. If people who truly understand capitalism, which is, it's really a very simple concept, you can do it with coconuts and apples on a desert island. Somebody dedicates themselves to getting apples. The other people want some apples, but they're better at growing coconuts, so they swap apples and coconuts. And it's so simple. And we were given all of the tools, given all of the freedom to create this land that should be really prosperous and successful, and it's just falling in on itself. And these are government policies that have destroyed things. They've destroyed the labor markets. We've created a permanent underclass. We're going to talk a little bit about that just from a couple of the headlines that have been coming out here, both locally and nationally. And it is so, it is in spite of politicians that we've even kept it together this long and have had some levels of success on an individual basis, that we have businesses out there that are able to operate and succeed in spite of all of the regulations and the fees and the taxes, all of the things that are constantly pulling them back. Some people are still able to succeed, but that number of people is shrinking. It's hard to watch knowing that it just does not have to be this way. You disappear the political class. Just disappear the political class. We are a completely different nation. And the frustration to me, as an observer of this two-party system, this tribal warfare between people, is essentially these two parties turn everybody into statists, just not acknowledging the complete failure of our political class on both sides, and instead cheering for one side because you believe the other side is so bad that you need to put your bad side in because your bad guys are not near as bad as the other guy's bad guys. And it is this constant ratcheting down, 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 down. Yeah, I'm in a bit of a mood. I had to stop doing show prep last night and watch, what did I watch? I watched a couple of episodes of Veep. If you have not seen Veep, now I know a lot of people, maybe you're boycotting Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She was Elaine in Seinfeld, and she plays Selina Meyer in Veep because I believe she's a liberal. I don't do that. If somebody entertains me and is good at their craft, I don't care. They don't raise my taxes. They don't lock people in cages. They don't mandate vaccines. I can disagree with somebody. I don't care. It's not going to affect me. But if you have not seen Veep, it just shows the disgusting underbelly of politics, and it's Washington, D.C., and it's so clever and so funny. Now, if you are triggered by cuss words, if you're not one for foul language, avoid Veep, because there's plenty of it. But while I understand it is a fictionalized, comedic accounting of what goes on in Washington, D.C., I would imagine it's just the hatred, the backstabbing, the backroom deals, the lobbyists, everything. It just paints Washington, D.C. and the political class in just the most disgusting, vile light. And so, of course, I love it. And I would imagine it's fairly accurate, maybe some hyperbole, but with the results we're seeing right now, you just know these people are just the scum of the earth. So I had to stop show prep last night, kind of cleanse my palate with that. I guess it satisfied both. It got me some comedy. It got me out of the news. And it also got me to kind of, you know, celebrate the disgusting nature of our political class. As I get through the first hour, you'll understand why I'm so just disgusted by what I see. I was going to do some quotes of the day. Somebody yesterday fact-checked my John Adams quote, and they might have caught a phony in there. Now, I had no reason to question this one. There have been some quotes that I've said the attribution is suspect, but there's a John Adams quote. I'm going to paraphrase, but I guess it doesn't matter now if it's not an accurate quote. It was something along, there's two ways to conquer a people. One is by the sword and one is by debt. Apparently, maybe there's no record, according to the Adams Institute or something like that, of him having ever said that. But anyway, as I get through the first hour today, he should have said it. They did say it's consistent with his views on the world. But we have been enslaved in this debt-based society. So anyway, take that for what it's worth. I soldier on with more, not adequately vetted quotes, but we're going to use them anyway. If anybody wants to, I appreciate the fact checking. I don't ever want to get anything wrong. Lao Tzu said, care about what other people think and you will always be their prisoner. Care about what other people think and you will always be their prisoner. That makes me a free man, doesn't it? You've heard my show. I go on conservative talk radio talking about ending the drug war. Don't have your children join the military. The police aren't always right. I'm a free bird because I don't really care what other people think. I just want people to think. That's really all I care about. Aesop said, we hang the petty thieves and appoint the great ones to public office. Aesop says, we hang the petty thieves and appoint the great ones to public office. I made a quote about this the other day, but you know, we talk about the shots or wars or anything. How is it that somebody who kills a dozen people is known as a serial killer and we lock them away, maximum security, never to be seen from again, and often execute them? But if you kill a few hundred thousand people, you're just called a politician and you get a taxpayer-funded pension. And then this may be my favorite one. This is Jacob Bolsidar Wisniewski. He said, to eliminate statism is not to physically subdue the rulers, but to mentally liberate the ruled. To eliminate statism is not to physically subdue the rulers, but to mentally liberate the ruled. This is 2 hours a day trying to mentally liberate the ruled. As I explain the police state to you, as I say that the federal government has no claims on a nickel of your income, I am attempting to mentally liberate the ruled here. The only thing I might disagree with on this quote, as they say, to eliminate statism is not to physically subdue the rulers. I got to tell you, I think we've gotten to the point that some physical subduing is in order. There should be a special kind of hell prison cell made for some of these people. Now, I used a Peter Schiff clip the other day, speaking of fact-checking. It was stunning in what it was as he delved down into the details of the student loan forgiveness. And I got to tell you, it was so bad, I should have been suspicious. Well, Peter Schiff, I have to wait for his next podcast. And I do encourage people to listen to Peter Schiff if you want to understand exactly what's going on economically. He's a bit of a stopped clock, but I he's such a fellow traveler to me. You know, I've been watching what we've been doing financially in this country for decades and just saying, this cannot stand. And somehow they paperclip it and duct tape it together, and we get through another year, another 5 years, another 10 years. And he sees these things and, you know, things like the Federal Reserve's new programs, QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4, QE5. It's always amazing they get away with another one and somehow are able to, as I say, duct tape this economy back together again for a few more years. So he can be a bit of a stuck record. I've felt his frustration, but he ultimately is one of the clearest thinking, best Austrian economists out there understanding the economy, and what he predicts comes true. So it sometimes takes a while for it to flesh out, but Peter Schiff is very good. But on his next podcast, he said he had gotten something wrong on the student loan program. We had given the numbers the other day, and it looked like some people might have student loan forgiveness of up to $100,000 after a 10-year sunset period. It turns out there's a cap on that. So it is a dramatically different scenario. There is still, however, for student loans, and I won't get back into the details because I'd have to play another long Peter Schiff clip, but at the end of 10 years, if you have $12,000 or less left on your student loans, that can be forgiven too. So there's possibilities, you know, this almost doubles for a lot of people what they could claim for free college. The devil's in the details. It also changes the percentage of your income. Cap goes from 10% down to 5% that you would pay on your student loans. It's more giveaway. It's more inflation. It's more entitlement to these people who took out student loans. The program is worse than even just the $10,000 initially, but it is not as bad as Peter Schiff laid out the other day. That's the big fact check. I really hate that, but even Peter Schiff is allowed to get something wrong, and I would hope that I would get the same grace that occasionally things come out that some of the details are murky on as they are moving through the headlines. Anyway, it's not as bad as the hundreds of thousands of dollars or the $100,000 that I thought somebody might qualify for. It's still wrong. As Kim Wade says, wrong as apartheid. This idea that they're going to forgive these student loans, just wave a magic wand and put the taxpayer on the hook for the giant hole that it'll blow in the American budget that the taxpayers asked to fill. But not as bad as originally discussed. So anyway, I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to talk about just, you know, what has happened to our economy and just the absolute unnecessary nature of what's taken place. We were doing so good. I mean, just this little upstart country from the late 1700s to the early 1900s. I mean, it took about 130 years where we were sitting on top. I mean, that's a blink of the eye in the history of the world and nations. We went from just scrappy frontiersmen up to, you know, the most successful, prosperous country the world had ever seen within such a short period of time. And I am telling you, you can believe it's just the other side that is destroying what could have been built in this country, but it's not. It's corruption. It is corruption in this country has just derailed this fantastic experiment that was turning out so well. So we're going to talk a little bit about the landscape of the country right now as it stands, as our political leadership has led us completely off a cliff. Be right back. Yeah, I'm looking at my notes and what I'm going to talk about, and my mind goes off and just branches all over the place, just blame to go around our political class. What started this yesterday was I was watching a news story. I think it was a national news story about the water crisis in Jackson, and they interviewed some woman who had been waiting in line. I think the way they described it, she had been waiting in line for hours in a car in 95 degree heat with no air conditioning to get one case of bottled water. There's about a million things wrong with that. You know, the helplessness of people, and particularly the permanent underclass that's been created. And it's been, some people will say it's deliberate. I'm sure there's people who want an ignorant population. You know, you can't get away with saying we're not in a recession after two quarters of negative GDP growth unless you have a stupid population. People just have to be stupid for them to get away with their lies. And both parties do this. They distract their constituencies and try to convince you that everything they do is great, and the other side is just screwing it all up. Now, you've got no argument with me in these Democrat-run cities like Jackson or Detroit or Chicago or St. Louis. It doesn't matter. We can see exactly what's going on. Democrats can see it, too. They just can't admit, like so many people, they can't admit they were duped. And they are constantly under the assault of, yes, but if the other side gets controlled, all of these terrible things are going to happen. It's just such a great con game. You can't imagine a better scenario for failure to thrive than convincing a people that the other side would fail worse. Or would hurt you worse. So we've got this woman who's sitting around for hours. What does a case of bottled water cost? About $4. I know these things because I live in Jackson and I live off of bottled water and filtered water through my gravity-fed filter. It's gotten to the point now where I don't know I can trust my gravity-fed filter, so I'm brushing my teeth with bottled water. I do still have water pressure and turlet facilities and all that good stuff. You got to love a city that comes out and says, oh, you can shower in it, just don't open your mouth. Don't let it get into your mouth. I mean, we are seriously, just days away from footage on the national news of people walking down the streets in Jackson with the big pads on their head and the giant water buckets, things you see in Namibia. If that's a real place, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, we are that close to it. But it was the helplessness of this woman, and God love her. Look, this situation, while we've had a boil water alert, I mean, this total failure of the system with no water pressure did catch people by surprise. But the fact you'd have to sit around and wait for hours in your car, and I would imagine she didn't have air conditioning, so I guess she could at least cut her car off. How many people burned through a few gallons of gasoline to get a $4 pack of bottled water? I think they were only given one case to each person. But it is this helplessness. And I don't know. I haven't been to the Kroger in Jackson. I'm sure their shelves are bare of bottled water. They'll get more in. But can you not get the neighborhood together and go, hey, let's get a guy with a truck to go to Vicksburg and get us a bunch of water? Can you not figure this out? Do we really need to wait for somebody to hand something out? And it is this permanent underclass that has been created, and this is where my mind goes off in a million different directions. I've talked about this many times. I'm in positions over the years, but particularly over the last 3 to 4 years, where I have interviewed a lot of entry-level employees, people making anywhere from $10 to $15 an hour, and I am just stunned by how poorly they are prepared for any entrance, even at an entry-level job, for a professional life. Now, this is families, this is parents or parent. Obviously, we got a problem with single mom homes. The dad's gone. But the schools get these kids for 12 years for 8 hours a day, 9 months out of the year. I'm too lazy to reach over and calculate that. How many hours our kids are in the custody of these institutions, and they don't teach them how to speak intelligibly. teach them how to speak, might be a first step. Then teach them how to think, how to interact with other human beings in real life in a professional setting, what to wear to a job interview, to not smell like weed or cigarette smoke, to not show up 45 minutes late, to not cop an attitude, to be, you know, to not be able to recount your job skills. I've got people that I'll interview. I'll say, you know, you got any experience in this? And they'll tell you that, yeah, I worked at 5 different places last year. Hey, dummy, that's not a resume builder. That shows you don't stay anywhere for any period of time. I mean, just the most basic things, things that my parents taught me. I'm a Jackson Public Schools graduate. I was in DECA, Distributive Education Clubs of America. This was like a sales and marketing club. I don't know if they still have that or not, but I had a wonderful teacher, Mrs. Batt. And we did kind of business stuff, but it was largely my parents that told me, get off your butt. Oh, no, you're not wearing that. You wear a collared shirt to a job interview. You get there on time. You be respectful. You say, yes, sir. No, no, ma'am. Nobody's doing these things. And this has created this permanent underclass. These people are never going to succeed. I almost drop a tear every time I leave one of these job interviews where I think, that is somebody. I talked to a girl the other day. I thought to myself, she just needs to get knocked up and get on welfare now. Isn't that sad and sick? Feels very judgy. I felt bad for this girl. I wasn't mad at her. It was one of the worst job interviews I'd ever seen. She couldn't communicate. She had an attitude. She looked like crap. Across the board, nobody, this girl was 20 years old, nobody has taken the time to explain to them how to go to a job interview. It is this permanent underclass, and nobody's fixing it. Nobody's doing anything to fix it. And these are the people who have to wait in line in 95-degree temperatures in a car where they can't have air conditioning because they don't have the resources to have a car with air conditioning. And they will have more of these kinds of people because our schools are failing. And why are the schools failing them? Because political leadership doesn't care about educating people. This is so unnecessary. All of it is so unnecessary. We have got a permanent, helpless underclass in this country, and it is growing. I got a clip when we come back. It's not just in Jackson. I got a clip from Texas. And when I say this, I hope I'm clear about this. Well, we know these kinds of stories exist, Mike. It's just, I have really very little tolerance for things that are just unnecessary. You know, a lot of people put chaos in their lives. I've had people in my life that just injected chaos that just didn't need to happen. You know what I mean? They just like they create controversy. Bad things happen in life. I'm ready for challenges and setbacks and all those kinds of things. Things definitely happen, but when things happen that just don't need to happen, you know, if the people of this country were just freed from the political class, end these endless regulations and taxes and fees and fines and bossing us around and stifling the ability of somebody to create a business and hire people and train people and all of these other things. If we just got those people out of the way, we've just got all of the bones of just true prosperity here, and we've had it before. We've squandered it. We have just squandered and let this political, this state. And understand when a libertarian talks about the state, we're just talking about the government at any level, federal, local, municipal. We've just let the state come in and tell us they know what's best, and they're strangling us. And then they're these people at the bottom rungs are so helpless now. And instead of realizing that this helplessness is toxic to them and it's going to trap their children too, they embrace the helplessness and just ask for more help. Wait for more help to come rather than understanding it's up to you to make good things happen, to overcome, to achieve. Don't be waiting for somebody else to provide for you. As I said, I'm kind of rambling now. But I'll play this clip from Texas. You know, in our non-recession, things are really booming. CNBC will tell you. Everything's going great. The White House will tell you. Economy is really booming. It's cooling off a little bit in this booming economy that we've had. It's cooling off just a tad bit. That's to be expected, is what they say. There's no recession to see here, is what they say. Well, we'll let the people of Texas tell you what's going on. right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. I'm in a mood. I'm telling you, I am in a mood. I have no tolerance for just things happening that just are completely unnecessary, and they're no benefit. You know, we're going to have Americans Prosperity on next hour, I believe. And one of the things they do, and why I'm so high on this organization, is that they go out and fight for economic liberty here in the state of Mississippi, where we desperately need it. You know, we have this supermajority red state, and Americans for Prosperity, Mississippi Center for Public Policy, their legal arm, I think it's the Institute of Justice. Do you know they had to fight tooth and nail to take off these huge restrictions on hair braiders? We've got a political class that thought they knew better than anybody else. They were going to set up a bunch of regulations. I can't remember what it was, 130 hours worth of training you had to go through, and you had to pay, you know, thousands of dollars to go in and braid hair. Now, is it not just common sense to the average person? I'm good at braiding hair. I want my hair braided. Well, that works out great. Can I give you a few bucks to braid my hair? Sure. No. Not in the state of Mississippi for a long period of time. No, you had to go through all these regulations. You had to get signed off. You had to get certified. You had to go through all this training. How many people could have been making money and not been that helpless woman sitting in a 95-degree temperature in a car with no air conditioning waiting on a case of water? One single case of water provided to them for free. The $4 case of water. So if you understand what I'm saying, this stuff is just, it's so unnecessary. Free markets are such a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's very human nature. You know, before there were governments ruling over people and politicians injecting themselves into every nook and cranny of our lives, free markets have just always existed to some degree. You've just got, Fred's got something I want, I've got something Fred wants, it works out great, because I don't want to have to make everything I need. So the people who are better at making some of the things I need, I can trade what I've got for what they've got. Supply and demand is very natural in these things. I mean, and we were given the tools here to free us from government intrusion in those kinds of things with our Constitution. You're basically a free human being. It was a very laissez-faire. It was a hands-off government. Hey, we got a government that's just going to do a very few, small, limited number of things. The rest of it's up to us. And we have allowed the political class to say, no, we know better than that. It would be chaos if we left it to you people to run your lives. We're going to step in and run them for you. And what are the results? This is a story out of Texas. In our booming economy, oh, it's they'll tell you it's cooling a little bit, but we've had such a boom.
Line of desperation. Drivers parked along a busy Dallas road. They're waiting for food.
This looks like what we saw a couple years ago.
Unfortunately, it's worse than a couple of years ago. We are serving now at higher levels than we even did at the peak of the pandemic.
Trisha Cunningham of the North Texas Food Bank says every giveaway is just as busy.
And we're good.
As people say, they can't afford groceries.
And it's just the basics. It's flour, sugar, eggs, milk. We don't buy cookies, cakes. We don't even have that luxury anymore.
Well, she should understand. I mean, Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, came out and told us, look, lady, the era of abundance is over. I hope you've enjoyed it. The guy I played from Denmark came out and said, oh, you've been living good for 40 years. That's over. You got to pay the price for it now. I mean, this is the political class. They've decided this is the end of we can't get cookies and cakes. We can't afford those kinds of luxuries. This is the United States of America in 2022.
As inflation has grown, so has need. One in six Americans relied on food banks last year. That's.
Can you hear this? One in six Americans relied on food banks last year. Now, you could say something about pandemic. Well, Mike, we had this unprecedented, once in 100 years, virus. I mean, it wasn't real deadly. It really didn't affect anybody that much under about 70 years old, unless you were morbidly obese, but still we had to shut down the entire country. Look, I've made this point before. Since the 1960s, what was that? The Great Society. They're going to create our political class was going to create the Great Society. And you can say it was Lyndon Johnson, it was Democrats who put out the Great Society. They knew that they needed to start putting people under their thumb, making people dependent on the government, as LBJ said, we'll have them voting for us for the next 100 years. He was right. You get people, you know, I'm sure that most of them, you know, my dogs love me. When I had dogs, I'm dogless right now. It's actually very sad. But when I have dogs, I'm sure they love me, but it's not a coincidence probably that they understand that I'm where the food comes from. But, you know, we have had in this country for about 50 years now, we look at the Great Depression. And I know I'm repeating myself. I've mentioned this probably 4 or 5 times over the years on this show. During the Great Depression, we had these food lines. That's the big image of the Great Depression, right? Men in their trench coats and their fedoras. Everybody wore a hat back then. And you'll just see them, just lines and lines of people lined up to get bread. The bread lines, they called them. We have that each and every day in the United States for about the last 50 years, and it's been steadily getting worse. Now, I'm not just talking about these food banks where 1 in 6 Americans are relying on them to even feed themselves. I'm talking about the fact that every day in the grocery store, there are people standing in food lines, except they get it on a little debit card you don't even notice. We've got tens of millions of Americans right now that are reliant on the government to feed their families. Didn't have to be this way. Absolutely didn't have to be this way. There are people in society that will fall through the cracks. There are some people that, you know, there is such thing as just really crappy luck. You know, there's a lot of people out there who can have setbacks, myself included, but you got a family to fall back on. You've got, you know, your parents have done okay. Maybe they help pick you up. Some people don't have that. They don't have a network of support. And there are some very, very sad stories there. And that's why there's charities and churches and things like that to lift these people up. But instead, we've just decided to do this, air quotes here in the studio, safety net. It's a safety net like something in Indiana Jones, where when you step on the net, it scoops you up and traps you in it, and there is no escape. So we actually have people standing in bread lines now for 50 years, and we just don't notice it. Because it's just on an EBT card. They're just in the checkout line in front of you. You don't really notice what they're paying with, but they're actually paying with government benefits, with free bread. It's really the same thing. And, you know, and I look, I also have a theory, I guess you could say. I should have pulled this Julian Assange quote for today, too. He said something like, you can never solve a problem that the media will not let you perceive. A little bit of a paragraph. I think I just about nailed it. That was Julian Assange. You remember Julian Assange. He's the guy that Donald Trump put into a Belmarsh prison and slow killed during his term. And Joe Biden's trying to finish off the job by extraditing him to the United States and sentencing him to life in prison. That Julian Assange, he said, you can never solve a problem that the media won't let you perceive. It's my perception, it's my theory, it's my belief that we've been in and out of recessions for a few decades now. And I actually have the charts pulled up, but I don't know, I'm feeling a little lazy. But when we've got, you know, and again, I listen to people talk about the Trump years being the greatest economy that the world has ever known. I'm looking at GDP by year. I'm looking at 1962, 6.1. 1964, 5.8. 1965, 6.5. 1966, 6.6 GDP. Donald Trump had 3% GDP at his highest watermark, and we're told that was the greatest economy that had ever existed in the history of mankind. I don't know how you get there, but a lot of people just accept it on faith. But in recent decades, you know, GDP, I've done stories about it, that it's trended down, where we used to be very normally in the 4, 5, 6% growth in this country per year. We've trended down to the 1, 2, 3%. And if you look at it as a trend line by decades, it's going lower and lower and lower and lower. And now we're fully in contraction. We're in a recession. But when they, you know, I'm looking at 2013, they said that the GDP growth rate was 1.8%. And GDP has gotten to, by taking all the economic activity, figuring a growth rate for that, and then subtracting the inflation figure. Unfortunately, in this country, they lie to us about inflation. They manipulate that statistic so it always understates it. So if you subtracted the actual, the real life inflation rate, it would take several more points off of GDP. So 2013, we're showing 1.8% growth for that year. I bet you anything that was a negative growth when you, if you had actually been accurate about inflation rates. 2016, 1.7% GDP. If they were honest about inflation and had taken it out, that would have been a negative growth year as well. And these things are just littered through, 2007, 1.9%. If they had accurately measured inflation, that probably would have been a negative. I'm picking the ones under 2%, but they understate inflation by 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right now probably about 8 or 9%. And so I believe this permanent underclass of people has been growing as our economy has been shrinking. But as Julian Assange says, the media won't let you perceive that because they just report these positive numbers while the permanent underclass continues to grow. Now, the middle class has escaped this for a while because they've been able to accumulate debt. They've been able to accumulate debt to make up for the shortfalls to keep their standard of living high. That's coming to an end. We're about to see interest rate increases for the first time in 40 years. Oh, sure, interest rates have gone up and down a little bit. It's not a straight line, but I'm talking about in earnest. We have had falling interest rates now for 40 years to facilitate more and more debt to allow people to keep their heads above water. When that changes, when that snaps back, that's where the middle class goes. Whoosh. Now, this sounds doom and gloom. My point of doing this segment, I'm so glad I'm going to have a guest next hour. It's better. You know, when you got another human being in there, you don't get to really stew in your own juices the way I'm doing it right now. But the point of this is all unnecessary. This is driven by a political class that has got their regulations and their rules. They drive policies that are destructive to the average American while benefiting only a teeny tiny group at the very top. And when I see these stories of the Texas food lines where I hear 1 in 6 Americans relied on a food bank last year we were reopening. They're not even talking about 2020. They're talking about 2021. 1 in 6 Americans already on a food bank. And what is coming is going to be dramatically worse. Dramatically worse. And it is exclusively because, now, on an individual basis, some people will suffer from time to time. That's life on planet Earth. It's sad. We should all rally around our friends, our relatives, our loved ones. Our churches should be helping. Charities should be set up to help people. People will fall through the cracks. People will have adverse events. But on wholesale, the wipeout, the decimation of the lower working and middle classes in this country is driven by horrific policy in this country, by a political class that has done over the past several decades and really on steroids in the past 12 years, the greatest wealth transfer from the middle class of any country at any time, in any point in history, up to the very top of the ladder. Very top. We're talking about the 0.01%. They're doing great. And this is done through policy by both political parties in this country. You can tell I'm frustrated. This does not need to be this way. I'll be right back.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, only a couple of minutes left in this hour. We're going to come back with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. She's probably going to get to get her ear bent on this stuff, too. And I know, Americans for Prosperity, they actually fight these fights. And they do it in ways that I'm just not wired to do. I'm too impatient. I don't like the political process. You need people that know how to work the system and actually start moving things. It's a giant cargo ship. You just turn it by a degree here and a degree there. I'm too impatient for that. And one of the reasons that I'm a libertarian, and I've been reading out Libertarian Party quotes, they're just about abolishing everything. I mean, just getting rid of it all, because these are all impediments to the quality of life that Americans should enjoy. So what's happening is just, it's pointless. It is just absolutely, public schooling doesn't have to be hard. We did it very, very well. For some number of years, the 1950s, the 1960s. And we've made it worse through policy, through bureaucracy. So all of these things, they're just getting worse. And we continue to carry water for these people who are destroying the education for our children, our health, our wealth, our wealth. We should be such a prosperous country. We really should. And we should be the rising tide that lifts all boats. It is the political class that is the impediment. People succeed in spite of it, not because of it. Even to you Republicans out there, you want a business-friendly somebody? They need to not be involved at all. They shouldn't have any influence on how you do with the business. That should be between you and your customers. Anyway, back in a minute. Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. Every Thursday, we have a representative from Americans for Prosperity come in and tell us what they're trying to do to free Mississippi economically. And today, we have got Starla Brown with us, the executive director.
State director, whatever.
I can never remember your title. It's a queen bee.
Titles don't mean anything to me. I'd like to think I'm just that person out there who's trying to make a difference, right?
Yeah, so... So I'm in a mood today. There's so many things out there that just don't need to be happening. I think economically in this country, we've got all the tools given to us at the formation of this country to have created such a prosperous and happy and fulfilling place. And instead, we've surrendered a lot of that, what was supposed to be personal responsibility and autonomy, to governments and bureaucrats and agencies and regulatory bodies. And they've made an absolute mess of things. And I have so little tolerance for just unnecessary things. And they're so visibly not benefiting people that it's frustrating to me. But none is more highlighted these days. Of course, there's a whole laundry list of things to go through between inflation and everything else, but nothing leads the stories more these days than the complete failure of the Jackson, Mississippi water system. And, you know, I know that you guys are kind of a champion for, you know, the business community in this state. Boy, when you think about what Jackson businesses are going through, and I really haven't watched the media, but it's bad enough when restaurants have to bring in bottled water and they can't use their soda machines and things like that, but at least they have working bathrooms. When you don't have working bathrooms, when you don't have water pressure, I just started thinking about it. There's nobody that's untouched by that. Law firms, are the federal courthouses even in business? I mean, I guess it depends on if they've got flushable water. I mean, this could be catastrophic. They don't get this fixed and sustainably fixed, because who also is going to move into Jackson to make investments there? Thinking, I mean, I'm constantly going to be back and forth between water problems.
Right. I mean, if you're a business looking to locate in Jackson right now, there probably are businesses that we're looking to locate. I'm sure they're looking at this. Well, look, I know that, you know, first and foremost, I want to say, I know that people are suffering through this, right? I can't imagine, you know, well, I've been without water, right, in the past. I was on a well system. I've had a hurricane. Know what it's like to be a week without running water, or to have an issue like that. But this didn't start with the flood.
No.
We're talking decades of
mismanagement,
bad policies to get here. And I think a lot of people are kind of, you know, we're sort of having this kumbaya moment right now, you know, of everybody coming together to solve the problem. When that's over, though, I think the accountability piece needs to be addressed. And it needs to be addressed going forward, because you can't sort of fix this or put a Band-Aid on it and not expect these bad policies, these bad decisions and things to continue on and not have the same type of things happen again. And, you know, for a lot of people, I was reading some people who said, like, you know, this is an embarrassment for our state, right? This is the capital city of our state without a large number of businesses, residences, you know, government buildings, et cetera, not having water pressure, not having running water, you know, having to put portalettes outside, you know, to have bathrooms. And you know, restaurants were already, we were on a boil water notice in Jackson starting July 29th.
Yeah.
Okay. So July 29th, right? That was, just remind everybody.
And that's just the latest boil
the
water.
The latest,
it's
right.
The latest and enduring boil water crisis. But
crisis,
yeah.
Right. And during that time, pressure was, you know, not good. And there were in and out pieces with it as well. And so you just continue to have these failures across the system. And there's a lot of smart people here now working on it. The state and federal government have stepped in. The one issue that I see is like, okay, we're now in this crisis. Government's coming in because it's now, you know, it's now reached this critical mass. But the issue that I also see is that there are going to be a lot of people who just believe the government saved
right.
us. The government is that, and it does not solve the underlying problems that we have in, not just in Jackson, but in cities across America, where this dependency on government versus dependency on yourself, right? Or you know, creating a life that for you that is one economically that you can get through. And you know, and I read something this morning. I found this very poignant and interesting. So I guess it was a couple of years ago, maybe three, was kind of fighting, you know, the increase around minimum wage, whether it was in a state level, federal level, and certainly there still are states that are fighting, you know, we're fighting across that. But there was an article out this morning about the public works jobs, right? So these are the people who would work for the city of Jackson, who would work in these public service roles and jobs, and would help with these issues, right? You know, like they would be the people who would be watching over the
yeah.
water system or watching over different things. And one of the quotes in the article was from one guy was like, hey, I can go make more money at McDonald's. So why would I take
right.
this job? And so now a pay raise is becoming a big thing for 2023. Significant pay raises by the hourly rates or even by the salaried amounts, significant in different levels of public works. So the question is you had these roles and you were competing with the private sector. And in the private sector, we had government manipulation of what were truly supposed to be starter jobs, right? Or
right.
maybe you're an older retired person who just wants to get out and go run the drive-through at McDonald's. I have a friend who does that. She absolutely loves it. She just likes being around people. She works about 4 hours a day, part-time, you know, kind
yeah.
of at McDonald's. But those jobs were never meant to be those sustaining and fulfilling jobs, right? They had other purposes. And so you can see the result of manipulating even that minimum wage, right? And how that was even offset down to a problem like this. So I think it's just we got a lot of work to do. I mean, there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And those of us who understand the solution isn't government, it isn't big government. Is infrastructure a proper role of government? Sure. Sure. I mean, you know, but somehow, somewhere along this lengthy path of getting to this point, the government failed everyone.
Yes.
And that's the government, that city government has failed.
Yeah.
And if you're afraid to speak up and say that as a citizen living in Jackson, then you're not understanding the problem.
Well, we could spend the rest of the show talking about the failures of governments, and mm-hmm. you know, the Jackson government is certainly one of them. It's got a long laundry list of it. You know, one of the things that, you know, in Jackson would have always stopped me from starting a business in Jackson. I live in Jackson right now. I do have toilet water, so that's nice. I haven't really had any pressure problems, but you know, you live in a hell of a place when they come out on the news a couple of days ago and they say, it's okay if you've got water, it's okay to shower in it. Just don't let it get in your mouth. They actually said, they
right.
said this.
Right.
I mean, holy cow, we're in some trouble. But, you know, the city has been so non-friendly to businesses. I've had to go down. I did a home remodel. I had to get some like an investment property and had to get some permitting and stuff done down there. It was horrific. I mean, they did not care. I was an inconvenience to them to even show up. And sometimes I didn't really know the system completely. Sometimes I'd have to ask questions. I mean, I was going in there to kiss butt. It doesn't matter what kind of mood I was in. I put on a happy face and I was just overly friendly to these people because I realized they just held my fate in their hands. And if I, you know, and so I'm basically kissing the butt of these bureaucrats who didn't want me there, who let me know they didn't want me there. It was just so unfriendly to businesses in Jackson. And now you tack this on top of it. I mean, This, yeah. If they do not get this fixed. Now, you and I were talking before we came on, and I didn't even know this. I didn't look at the news this morning before I came in, which is irresponsible for a talk show host. But apparently Joe Biden has had a conversation with Lumumba. The Mumbler and Lumumba have gotten together and spoken about this. And what are they saying? Are they, the Fed's about to shoot a bunch of money to us or something?
Yeah, there's a percentage of I guess of money or a dollar figure that's going to come in from the federal government because of the emergency orders that have been placed. And then my understanding, or at last my understanding, was so the city of Jackson and the state are going to sort of equally, I guess, contribute to. I don't know what the long term is,
yeah,
here, right? Because right now, right now, the last 24 to 48 hours has really been about solving, you know, the immediate issues, right? Which is what has to happen. I mean, you can't have people living with, I mean, in some ways they've been living like they're in a third world country for a very long time, but that has to stop. And so, you know, that sort of proper role of government, making sure that the water treatment plant is up and running and doing that and figuring out how to resolve that. I know the federal government has also been, you know, there have been elected officials from the federal government in town addressing sort of the flooding issue, which is, you know, exacerbates this. It's not the cause. Exacerbates it. But so, you know, there's a lot of entities and a lot of government around downtown Jackson right now trying to figure things out and get things up and running and in a reasonable way. I mean, you know, Jackson. You know, I was thinking about the college kids, right? You were just visiting your son at college,
yeah,
right, last weekend,
yep.
Right? We talked about that, and we talked about student loan debt and everything else. We got a lot of these kids in school right now in downtown Jackson, and we have a proliferate, you know, this large amount of colleges in one area. So you've got Bellhaven and Tougaloo, and you've got Jackson State University, right, Mississippi College, and, you know, it goes on and on. And these schools have either not had water pressure, and not had, you know, clean water, not had the things that they need, and your kids are away at school, and this is what, you know, a lot of people send their kids to Jackson to college,
yeah.
And or if you're a local kid, right, and you know the campuses are suffering on this too.
Oh, it's just across the board, and it's interesting. I mean, you do definitely take things for granted. Obviously, the water issue in Jackson has been ongoing. The billing was crazy for a while. But it's amazing how this basically a singular point of failure for an entire metropolitan area is not maintained between the electricity grid and the supply of clean, running, drinkable water. These are like two points of singular, complete failure for a metropolitan area, and they just have let them kind of wither on the vine, and then when something happens, they try to jump into action at that point. I mean, almost feels like there's not much more important than making sure you at least have electricity and water, and then everything past that, at least you're functioning.
Right.
Public safety.
These are proper roles of government, right?
Yeah.
Infrastructure, public safety. You know, these are the kind of things. So, you know, part of the question becomes is, and obviously, I'm sure revenues to some extent, given the level of poverty that you see in portions of Jackson, right? There's revenues down, but there are revenues coming in. So the question becomes is, where do they go?
My understanding is that revenues have been going up for the state because
right.
they keep raising, you know, they're right. losing population.
State. Right, for
yeah.
the state. And how much of that goes to Jack, you know, there's the debate over how much goes to, you know, because the state funds a lot of municipalities, right, and contributes tax dollars to that. So the question becomes, but there is money going there. So where has it been going
right.
for? I would say, you know, let's just at least look at the last decade, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say, like, what's happened the last decade, right? And, you know, I've watched a few of the city council meetings. You know, I even went back and watched some older ones. It's quite a...
It's a real Algonquin round table, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's
a Mensa meeting.
Yeah, a lot of times it lacks civility, and it certainly doesn't feel like it's a conversation around trying to solve problems. You'll occasionally get a particular person who'll step up and say, well, you know, and be the voice of reason in the room, and then, you know, the next thing, everything breaks loose again, and it's just so it's difficult because those people are elected by the people in the city of Jackson to serve and to you know, to run that city in a businesslike manner, right? And one that does provide the public safety. We don't have public safety in a lot of areas there either.
No.
I mean, we have a shortage of police officers and law enforcement, right? We have, you know, shortages of a lot of things. but the question becomes is like, how can you go on for like this? And it's just every year it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And not blame the mismanagement, right? Not blame.
And it seems like there's leaders. No real. I mean, maybe this is so severe that it starts to change people's minds. But like you say, this has been going on for decades, and similar administrations keep being elected. Same kind of stuff, same kind of rhetoric, same slide down into this kind of chaos, and people will not change their minds about what kind of leadership they want in the state. That's strange to me because it's, you know, it's affecting these people who have voted for them. You know, this isn't just the people who lost water pressure, or can't drink, can't flush their toilets. They're not just, you know, people who didn't vote for Lumumba. You know, I mean, it's hitting everybody. It's like the inflation. It doesn't matter if you voted for Biden or not. You're paying the high prices.
Prices, right. Well, and we can't write the city of Jackson off. Like, that's not the mindset. I see people saying that sometimes, like, you know, it's over. It'll never come back. It's this, it's that. We can't write the city off. Like, that's the wrong attitude to have. It needs to be fixed. But there's going to be a lot of ways to look at how that gets done. And, my hope is that people are the sense of community and the business is, rather than, you know, just throwing their hands up in the air and fleeing and saying, like, I can't deal with this anymore. I know that's easy to do. I'm not sitting in that situation. Sometimes I'm, you know, it's like easier. I've had water, but I hope that's not the mindset, because I don't want to write Jackson off. I don't think anybody really does. We want to see Jackson be what it has been in the past and what it can be again. And I hope for some, like you said, I hope if some people get kind of woke about something right now, they get kind of woke about the fact that government was part of the issue, does mismanagement and should be blamed, and start thinking about how do we sort of come together to resolve that. I don't know what peace is going to be, but you know, it can't. And I hope at the end of the day, it's not just like, well, the federal government swooped in, Biden administration saved me, and so I'll just keep voting for the same type of policies that are actually what caused this to begin with.
Yeah. Well, the Harry Brown quote from the Libertarian Party, I think he ran for president, I can't remember what the year was, but he said, the government is great at one thing, and that's breaking your leg and then handing you a crutch and telling you you couldn't walk without them.
Right.
You know, that's what we're seeing right now in spades. So, all right, we're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We will be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we're back here with Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity. So, you know, this is not necessarily an economic issue in your wheelhouse when it comes to the water stuff, but it does dramatically impact economics for the city of Jackson. And you know, one thing you were saying, a lot of people say we don't want to throw our hands up about Jackson. The people that have been here, myself included, you know, I grew up in Northeast Jackson, graduated from Murrah High School, and Jackson really. You know, it was a bit sleepy, and you know, I mean, but it was a good quality of life, and we have watched now for really 30 years the voters of Jackson making some just really pretty horrific choices, keeping politicians in there that really do nothing but lip service. It's got this heavy. You know, it's basically, I don't know, are there any Republicans on the city council or anything like this? This is totally Democrat-run town, and, you know, and I don't even want to make this partisan, but when it comes to running cities, it certainly seems like Republicans do a better job than Democrats do.
Yeah, I think you've got the majority one way, you know, one way or the other, that, you know, across America, you look at cities where the leadership has adopted the policies, and whether that comes from state or federal government, but they've adopted the policies of, I'm just going to say, sort of the liberal left. I won't even put in a political party, because you could be an independent and still have that.
Right.
Or you could be a Republican and have that that mindset. I've certainly run across that in the past on certain issues, but I think the thing that you see here is it's just, it's been a lot of kicking the can down the road, yep. Right? It's just been decades of that.
That's what governments do.
Do, right.
Federal government is, you know, economically, we've kicked a can so far down the road. This can is so huge. We kick it again. I think it's going to tip back over on us and roll over us.
You know, I had the opportunity to work a good bit in the Venezuelan community in Florida. And
Venezuelan. Oh,
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and, you know, we had a lot of people there who were on a temporary visa right after the fall, basically, of what socialism does to a country, right?
Right.
And it's very difficult, me, after meeting with people and hearing story after story of people. And not everyone came, you know, not everyone came here with a, you know, any kind of one part. Frankly, some of the leadership followed sort of the left side of policy when they got here until they realized it sort of impacted some things they cared about. And so then there's sort of a mixed bag there of where people are. But when I hear the personal stories of individuals who, you know, like we had a gentleman who was an attorney in South Florida, and his, you know, he can't go back to Venezuela because he was banned to go back there. He can't go back home. But he has a beautiful home, two fairly new, wonderful, and expensive vehicles sitting in the driveway. And he can't even go back and visit his home because he's been banned for speaking out against the government and speaking out about things. And so he's not accepted back into the country, like to roam around freely, right? And then you hear from some of the people who I would say were sort of the one of the, you know, Venezuela became very two-tiered, and that's what you're seeing here in the United States right now, is a two-tiered society. And so when I hear their stories about how things once looked, how they started to decay, and it didn't, in Venezuela, it didn't happen overnight either, right?
Right.
And so there are actually, when you work with Hispanic immigrants who've for a period of time, and you hear their stories and you understand what happened in their countries when they were there for that downfall, they will be the most outspoken individuals here in America right now to stand up and say, wake up, people.
Yeah, you're trending.
I have seen this.
Right.
I have seen this problem. And I, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, wave the white flag, give up, it's this, it's that, or whatever, you know, like surrender kind of thing by any means. But there is some truth to what we are seeing right now through the bad policies of the Biden administration.
Yes.
When we look at what's happening with inflation and being in a recession, I'll just say it. We're in a recession, right?
Maybe by the end of next year, the economists say.
Yeah.
It's
not just, we're not having just a little bump in the road, right?
Yeah.
But when you know, I heard what you were talking about, like what was it, 1 in 6 people?
Yeah, food banks last year,
right? And things aren't getting better; they're getting worse. So this year, when you think about that, you start pulling it all together. You do need to wake up a little bit. You do need to wake up, and you do need to engage in the process with your elected officials. You do need to engage in what's going on, and the problem is there's still this message coming out of the White House, like everything is
going to be okay.
It's kind of like, I'm the government, I'm here to help, right? And, you know, the Reagan quote, right? And so it's just, it's a little unnerving, it is. And I'm like you, I'm a little bit in a mood today about some of it because, you know, we don't often talk enough about personal responsibility. We don't often talk enough about the fact that there are ways to solve poverty, but government intervention
creates it and
manipulates the economy in such a way that people can't rise above it sometimes. And frankly, like, you know, the conspiracy of the fact that are there government people who don't want people to rise above it? Right. I mean, that maybe so. But the thing is, we're not doing the right things. We're not doing the right things, and we're not sending the right message.
I'm telling you right now, a prosperous, well-educated, intelligent population in Jackson, Mississippi would not have the same leadership we got right now.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you.
Absolutely.
So those people, they know that. They know they're pulling the wool over people's eyes. They're saying all the right things to people who don't really understand how these policies are going to affect people. So they keep power there. I mean, if we had a Jackson, Mississippi full of a bunch of educated people who were doing well for themselves, no way in the world you'd have the government you have. So I absolutely believe they need these people dependent on them. They need people at that point where promises matter something. If you're successful and self-determined and everything else, you don't care what some politicians. I don't need you. I'm doing great. You know, you know, you don't need these people. It's actually, I never thought about it that way before, but it's almost an interesting thought experiment. What kind of government would Jackson have if you had a well-educated, you know, informed population?
Right.
It'd be totally different and running much better.
Well, you'd have to do a lot in the school system.
Oh, I know. Well,
you know,
maybe that's why they don't fix the schools.
Sure. Well, you know, when I say the word system, that's part of the problem.
Yes.
This notion that our public schools have to be this, you know, system. They're almost like a system of government in themselves. And so, you know, the issue becomes I feel like from that perspective, whether it be school boards or just the whole overall education system from the federal government all the way down to the local side, somewhere along the way, we've forgotten about the kids. We have really, really, in many, many cases. Are there some good schools out there? Absolutely. There are some great schools out there, right? But along the way, in trying to maintain this system, this public school system, and which is what we fund this system, we've forgotten that the real point here is to educate our children.
Oh, I think it's heartbreaking because I do not blame these kids, but you will look at kids who I interview regularly for years now. I've interviewed entry level people, and my heart breaks for some of them. And so, you know, I want to, at the end of a really bad job interview, I really want to get these kids. It's just I don't know how I'd be perceived. I don't know it would be welcome or anything, but I want to take them aside and go, look, here's some things that apparently nobody's taught you over the last 18 to 20 years. You need to put on a collared shirt, not a ripped up shirt. Your jeans, you need to pull your pants up. You need to not smell like cigarette smokes or weed. You didn't need to show up 35 minutes late. You know, you didn't need to kick back in the chair and slump over and mumble through. You know what I mean?
It's right. No, and we'd never think of doing that. Right.
Never.
But there's, you know, one of, you know, and you can't ignore the family aspect of it.
Absolutely.
Right? But because, look, if I even thought of being that person right at a job interview, my parents would have I would have been in trouble. Right.
Yes.
At home. Wouldn't have had to worry about how horrible that might have looked to the potential employer. Because
right.
When I got home, if that was found out. But the you know, that piece is part of it. And this really important piece here is that we don't teach the life skills like that in the public school system. A lot of times there's not programs out there to help with that.
Developed one. I've got a whole curriculum around this, and I'm telling you, I approached community colleges, the education system, and everybody said, well, we might want to try to implement this here or implement that there. Nobody ever really got interested in it. Cause I'm telling you, my heart breaks for these kids. It's not their fault. They're not being given the tools. These public schools have got access to these children for 12 years, 8 hours a day, 9 months a year, and they're not giving them the basic tools to go out into society and perform at a professional level. Some of the kids do great because they've got good homes, but it's not the preponderance of them. And I'd like to think that these are the exceptions to do a bad interview. But as I say, I have interviewed thousands just in the last 5 years, over 1,000 of entry-level people. And I would say the numbers of them that impressed in an interview were 10%. 90% of these kids, and they are going to be trapped in these cycles of poverty, and they are going to raise their kids with the same low expectations that they have as well, because they're not even living in a world where they can perceive a change to their status. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's just
right.
Entrenching itself, and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we're doing an exercise a while back, several years ago at work, and we were kind of going around the room and asking people to, you know, just introduce themselves and, you know, what was your first job, right? I forgot what the program was, but somehow that was applicable to it. And so when I got to myself in the room, I thought, well, it was actually working at, you know, a fast food restaurant. But if I really think about it, I actually started working when I was 12 because I was babysitting, right? I could babysit next door. There was a couple of places where, you know, my dad was right next door, I think, at 12. So that's why I could babysit, because he figured he could leap over.
He could hear you scream.
He could hear me scream if anything happened. He was right next door. And so we allowed that to do that. There were certain things that I could do, you know, that I could do chores or this or whatever. I was talking, you know, to a friend of mine the other day, and he was talking about, like, when I was a kid, I used to go door to door and sell seeds in the neighborhood. Yeah. And I used to raise my money from athletics or whatever. That's part of the issue in this country, is that individual responsibility has been so just deemed out of society, and dependency on government and government institutions has been in. And so the work ethic of, I'm just going to say it, hard work, meaning you may have to put in a few more hours. Yep. You may have to do a few more things this week to get to what you need to accomplish and to accomplish your goals, it's just becoming less and less prevalent in society.
Well, apparently it's getting worse. You've heard of this quiet quitting thing that's going on right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, people are just kind of checking out. They just don't think that they're being valued enough. You know, you've got to reach out for that. It doesn't get handed to you. You've got to extend an arm for it. You got to stand up and take it. You know?
I mean, maybe it's not just life skills in this. Maybe that's a good term for it, but maybe it's teaching leadership. Maybe it's teaching work ethics. Maybe it's teaching, you know, that life isn't fair.
I got to tell you. I think at this point, I think people are going to learn the lesson the hard way. I think these governments are going to have a hard time providing for the need that is about to arise.
Right.
And people are going to have to realize it's survival now. I've got to change the way I'm approaching things, because I think there's going to be opportunities out there for the people who are self-sufficient, who are ready to get up and go out and kill it. They're going to make it through. And a lot of people are not going to, sitting around waiting on somebody to come save them.
Yeah.
The savings, I don't think, is coming.
And when that tax base is just sort of gone in some of these cities or some of these, you know, parts, communities. When that tax base is gone, because everybody's dependent on the government who isn't producing the tax dollars, right?
Exactly.
And there's a tipping point when we're going to run out of, as Margaret Thatcher said, everybody else's money, right? So those of us who are paying in,
you don't want to be in those areas. Yeah. All right, we got to take a quick break talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back. You can't stop us now.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.